Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
Hey everyone, welcome to WebCology here on WMR.fm. It's the 30th of January, 2025. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, and we're going to be diving right in. It's been an interesting week, and we have Gavin Klondike, who is our resident expert in AI. He is going to be talking to us. He's only got a 20-minute window, so we got to get him in really early, and we want to talk DeepSeek, the ironies of DeepSeek. Gavin Klondike is a senior security consultant and researcher specializing in penetration testing and AI. He's the head of demos and workshops at the AI Village and the original author for two of the OWASP top 10 for LLM applications. He's the founder of the YouTube channel NetSec Explained, where he talks about immediate to advanced level network security topics in an easy to understand way. He's also here on the show right now. Gavin, welcome to WebCology. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Gavin.
Hey.
Okay, so DeepSeek drove the conversation this week as its very existence drove down the valuations of like techno giants who thought that they and only they have a lock on the development of AI models. Gavin, I got a couple of really quick questions. What is DeepSeek? How has it developed so quickly and inexpensively? And why has it blown the floor out of the industry?
I like how you say they're quick questions. They're actually pretty big ones.
Okay, well, let's start at the very beginning. What is DeepSeek?
Yeah.
What is this thing?
Let's get everybody on the same page. So, most industries, this didn't come out of nowhere. It kind of did, but it's built on the backs of giants. So back in the day, 2016, Google released a research paper called Attention is All You Need. And that started the whole conversation with these new forms of deep learning models called transformers. And so OpenAI took that research, ran with it. They built GPT-1, GPT-2, GPT-3. And it wasn't until GPT-3.5, which we mostly know as ChatGPT, that we really started to see the world kind of explode in this fervor of AI. And then ChatGPT comes out in November of, I believe, 2022. And then that February or that March, we see GPT-4 coming out. And we also see Llama coming out, which is Meta's version of the Transformer. At another point, other companies are coming out, right? So Claude had theirs, which is by Anthropic. Google has Gemini. Twitter came out with their own, now called X. That one's called Grok. And so all these companies are really kind of building up and building up. Most of them are here in the United States. In the United States, we have NVIDIA, and we also have state-of-the-art graphics cards, which are really good at parallel processing, which a lot of these deep learning model and transformers really rely on. And because of that, the US decided, hey, we need to have a strategic position where we are the only ones that have the state of the art hardware. So NVIDIA, you are no longer allowed to export that out to China. So China had more inferior cards. They did not have access to the CUDA drivers, which drives a lot of this, which is why NVIDIA's stock price exploded in the year 2023 and 2024. So all of this is kind of paving the way for where we are today. And here we have DeepSeek coming out with their DeepSeek Zero, which was getting pretty close to state-of-the-art models at just a fraction of the price, and then DeepSeek R1. Now, R1 is a reasoning model. So I'll say this in OpenAI speak. So GPT-3.5, that's ChatGPT. And then they came out with GPT-4, which is a more advanced version of ChatGPT. Then they made it faster with GPT-4.0. And then they noticed that it still couldn't answer things like how many R's are in the word strawberry. And so they wanted to add some reasoning into it. So they slowed it down, added some what's called chain of thought, or getting the model to think step by step instead of just giving an answer as soon as it can. And so that's where we get GPT 401. 401 mini came out, 401 full came out. And so these are this is where we start getting into the reasoning models. And there's a lot of research that this is built on top of. DeepSeek R1 took all of that research, combined it together, kind of reorganized a couple things, and they built everything on top of these inferior chips, which is very similar to saying they built a website out of assembly or machine code. So very, very complicated, very, very difficult to do, requires a lot of math and a lot of like internal systems understanding. So that's how GPT, or that's how DeepSeek R1 was born. Now, the kicker, and this is what is really caused it to hop up into the news, is OpenAI spent billions of dollars, Anthropic spent billions of dollars training their state-of-the-art models. DeepSeek spent about $6 million. Dollars.
Okay.
So like 1/27th of the price for the same reasoning model. And this is on the heels, right? So now President Trump, he was talking about giving $500 billion to these AI companies so that America maintained a strategic advantage when it came to AI. And then here's a Chinese company, basically a ragtag group of researchers, and they said, hey, you don't need that much. And it just made everyone panic. So the market took a major hit. Nvidia, which is a company that I have some stock into, there's also other chip companies, kind of across the board, a lot of investors divested from there. So Nvidia went from about $143 per share down to about $119 per share, to give you an idea of how drastic the reaction was to this. People are still trying to pick up the pieces and figure out what went wrong, or why DeepSeek was able to achieve this. And then even DeepSeek themselves have been kind of stirring up new news, which we can get into later. But yeah, it's just absolutely insane. Here are proprietary closed source models that have a business model behind them. And then DeepSeek, Chinese, they're not even a research firm. They're a venture capitalist firm. And they just said, hey, you know what? Here's a brand new, pretty close to state-of-the-art model, outperforms a lot of other models on benchmarks. And we're just going to release it for free, and not just for free. You can use it for commercial applications. They use the MIT license. So you can just build a business around this. Yeah, it's open source. You can run it locally. You can download it and use it for a fraction of the price of any of the GPT models that are out there today. So
just to
waves.
Be clear, a Chinese venture capital firm, which may or may not have more money than Kronos, as VC firms, you know, sometimes do, threw a whole bunch of cash into rapid development of a AI system that runs on, not state-of-the-art chips. And with, you know, incredibly complex math and the incredible talent that resides in China, they managed to do this and take the floor out of the American technocracy or trying to get technology and oligarchy together, and my tongue keeps falling over it. But the tech giants had why was it costing them so much? How come they didn't see this?
That's a good question. And because so many of these are closed source and proprietary, it's very difficult to know. The things that I can speak to is the head of DeepSeek. Let me see if I can remember his name, or, you know, pronounce it correctly. Ling Wenfeng. He has some really interesting perspectives on hiring and talent and talent development. Also, being a VC firm, they have some really interesting philosophies. So that's a good question. The OpenAI, Anthropic, all of these companies, they're hiring the best and brightest, right? And that comes with a price tag. They're also spending a lot of time in data acquisition. They're doing all sorts of things. And this Chinese company is saying, hey, you know what? We are a VC firm. We're actually making a lot of money through quant and other things. So we don't need this research to make us money. And so instead of trying to become closed source and block everybody out, let's just go ahead, do the research, and then release it for free. And everyone's going to know that we're top dog.
I hate to sound
So,
cynical, but beyond
yeah.
being top dog, what's in it for them?
There's actually a certain amount of pride for that. Look at the entire open source community. There are so many applications, platforms, environments that are released completely for free. And for a while, there were a number of LLM models that were released completely for free, right? All of Meta's Llama models were trained. It cost them millions up to billions of dollars to train, and those are free and open source. You can use them for all sorts of stuff. I don't know.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't know.
So, how much better or how comparable to say GPT 4.0 is DeepSeek?
So DeepSeek, as far as the benchmarks I've seen so far that have been independently verified, GPT 4.0 is below DeepSeek R1. You need to kind of combine, you need to kind of look at it as the quicker models versus the reasoning models. So according to the benchmarks that I have seen, the top dog right now is still OpenAI's O1, O1 full. DeepSeek beats OpenAI O1 mini, and then it beats everyone else.
What about accuracy? There's the I mean the most blatant example is the Chinese state's relationship to the history of Tiananmen Square. I understand if you ask DeepSeek about Tiananmen, it avoids the subject or tells you nothing. What about stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. When we talk about accuracy with these models, there's really two things we need to focus on. The first thing is going to be what are typically known as hallucinations. Does it just make up things? The purpose of the reasoning models are to minimize hallucinations. So it actually thinks step by step and it focuses more on providing accurate answers. The second thing we need to look at is what's called alignment. So being a Chinese model, you're right. There are certain things, all Chinese companies are closely tied or in some way, shape, or form, have ties to the ruling Chinese Communist Party there, which means that they also have certain restrictions. So one of the restrictions is that they can't talk about, things like Tiananmen Square. So far, that alignment is set so that, hey, these are topics you're not allowed to talk about, and it'll just say, hey, I'm sorry, I can't tell you that. Whereas if you ask for something outside of China, right, that isn't as heavily censored, say, America, January 6th, it'll give you information based on that. So that alignment is what is, some people would call it censoring. I just call it alignment. But it is preventing the answer to certain questions. But it's, unless you're looking for specific things, it's really not that egregious.
There was a data leak that came. It was reported in the Hacker News recently that showed a backdoor that sent meta information about every inquiry from DeepSeek to somewhere. Is there any credibility to that, or is that just one of the stories that are going to be going around?
Yeah, that has in fact been independently verified. DeepSeek themselves have, from what I've seen so far, remediated that. But this goes into a little bit more of a broader conversation around the need for cybersecurity. So it's really cool that you're doing some amazing things in your super duper lab over there, but unless you have, proper locks on the door, people can just break in. That's one of the conversations that we had at the OWASP group when we were creating, the industry standard of OWASP top 10 for large language model applications, where you can't just look at the model itself. You got to look at the environment that that model is running in. So that includes any sort of backend database, any sort of applications that are built around it. The information that was in these databases. So when you download the DeepSeek app onto your phone and you make requests to the online model, it's very similar to how Anthropic Claude uses it. It's very similar to how OpenAI uses it. They collect metadata information. Who's asking what questions? What IP addresses are they from? All sorts of information like that, you know, timestamps. And so that stuff was being passed back to the online servers. Again, everybody does this. So it's not... In America, I notice that we have certain questions around the way that Chinese companies collect our information, but it's, again, I want to stress, it's very similar to how we collect that same information here in the States. They're all private companies. They're just trying to gather information. So all that information, that metadata is being stored somewhere. And according to the hack and the reports that came out, those databases were more or less exposed. And so researchers were able to go in and get some of that information. They found private API keys. They found some snippets of conversation history. So that just goes to show, you know, if you're using an online model, again, also true for OpenAI and Claude or any of the others, if you're using an online model, just be careful what you put in there, because what you put in there could be used for training again, and what you put in there can be used for any sort of tracking as well.
Hey, well, speaking of data collection and training and ironies of ironies, DeepSeek got itself together rapidly, like we assume really, really quickly. OpenAI says that it has evidence that DeepSeek actually trained off of it and other AI technologies. What's the chances of, like, is OpenAI probably, is AI, OpenAI right, possibly right with their evidence? And isn't that kind of what OpenAI and other AI technologies did to the rest of us?
That's a really fun question. So there are allegations and open lawsuits against OpenAI saying, hey, you stole our data, proprietary copywritten data, to train your models. And here OpenAI is saying, hey, they stole our proprietary data to train their models. They stole the data that we stole. So there's not a lot of sympathy in the tech sector for OpenAI on that claim. As far as evidence, there's no independent verification that this is true. It is certainly plausible. It is very much in line with how many other AI companies have collected their data as well. Microsoft did identify that some of the OpenAI APIs were being used by Chinese IP addresses in what did seem like a way of scraping information. So it's possible. I would personally believe that it did happen. But as far as evidence, we don't have a very clear smoking gun. That's still being dug into. Again, I can't stress enough, all of this happened since Monday. So it's only been around for a week. So all this news is like trying to drink from a fire hose. So again, we're going to hear something new tomorrow. We're going to hear something new on Monday. That's kind of the state of things right now.
And that's why we're having you back in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
I know you're pushing for time. We're gonna get you off the line any second now. But and I know we're gonna see something different tomorrow. I know we're gonna see something new on Monday. Any inkling what those things might be before they actually come and morph into something else?
Honestly, that's hard to say. I could not give any sort of prediction. I think what's gonna happen is people are going to find flaws in the DeepSeek model. People are going to find jailbreak prompts. People are going to start building some applications off of it. And people are going to find ways to replicate. So maybe even in a matter of months, somebody's going to take how DeepSeek built their system, refine it, and then build an even stronger rational model. So, it's anybody's game at this point.
What does this mean for Altman's empire? What happens to the technologists, the tech giants of today?
There's a very famous quote that was from a Google memo last year, and it was saying, "We have no moat." And
Jesus.
it basically means that, hey, even though we have internal proprietary data, as soon as people get access to that, they're going to build their own and they're going to build it better. And so we saw that with OpenAI's ChatGPT. As soon as ChatGPT came out, right, that was state of the art. 3 months later, that was old news because Llama came out, Gemini came out. I think they were calling it Bard, Google Bard at that time.
Yeah,
and so new models came out just a few months after this groundbreaking technology. And then a few months after that, new models came out that implemented better reasoning, more information, less hallucinations. A few months after that, something else happened. A few months after that, something else happened. Right now, we're seeing the rise of reasoning models and AI agents. So, yeah, as far as what this means for closed source proprietary technology, I think what we're going to see is companies are not going to rely so much on that. We've seen a consistent pattern of, hey, we're going to build a technology, we're going to build a service around that technology, and then we're going to charge for that service. And as soon as a company does that, they either get pigeonholed into now becoming a service company. For example, Anthropic's running into that issue. Anthropic does a really good job with pair programming. So that'll be things like Cursor, but Anthropic doesn't have enough GPUs to hold up to the demand that people are asking for when it comes to Cursor. So now they're spending all their time, money, and resources on getting more equipment to provide that service than creating the next version of the Claude model. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting space right now.
They're hooped. In other words, they're hooped.
They got an anchor around their neck.
Oh my God.
We're
going
to see, I assume we're going to see something very similar to OpenAI. Right now, the company itself is not what some would consider profitable, and they're burning money like crazy. I've heard some insider information as far as, well, it's not insider information. It's just speculation. I'll say that much. As far as how much money they have that they can continue to burn without additional funding. A lot of these technologies, you got to understand, they're being built without they don't make money, right? This is strictly for research. So we'll see what happens when the investor money dries up, and maybe open source will win. Who knows?
Does this mean that Operation Stargate has been grounded, or at least canceled, not renewed for another season?
I would assume Operation Stargate, and for those who don't know, Operation Stargate was the proposed $500 billion that President Trump was going to give to the AI companies as part of research efforts to maintain strategic advantage in the United States. So I think there's going to be some reconsideration if that makes sense, because, hey, Tony Stark built this in a cave. Why do I need to give you $500 billion to do worse? So we'll see.
Can I ask this one last question, because I know you got to go? On the open source, you were just saying, does being open source make it faster for other people to adapt it? Because I noticed an ad yesterday, something about Azure's already putting in DeepSeek to it. So does open source make it, there's no moat, but is there like, hey, here's the bridge, cross the moat?
Yeah, open source removes all barriers to adoption. So there is nothing stopping people from Microsoft today implementing R1 into their environment. We're already seeing third-party API providers implementing R1 into their environments. Grok, G-R-O-Q, is like a hosting provider, and so they're looking at implementing that. There's a whole host of other ones. But yeah, again, you can run this locally on your PC. I haven't had time, otherwise I would have downloaded it. You could easily download one of the smaller models, so like a 7 billion parameter model, onto consumer-grade hardware, no issues. If you want the full model, then you're going to need some really powerful hardware, but that's exactly it. You know, there's no limits to adoption. And then on top of it, DeepSeek released a research paper explaining exactly how they built the thing and what you need to do to build your own.
Hey, Gavin, we're going to have you on 2 or 3 eons from now. I mean, not 2 or 3 weeks from now, that may well be the same difference. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today and getting us over the hump of understanding DeepSeek. The irony was just the irony is just too big to stare over. But thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
Thank you
thank
for
you,
having me.
Gavin. Yeah, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Hey, friends, that was senior security consultant and researcher Gavin Klondyke. He specializes in penetration testing and AI. And he's our resident expert on AI around here. And Christine, my goodness, that's the kind of interview that you kind of wish we could stop recording and you just take a couple seconds to get your head back in place.
Yeah.
Wow, hey.
Yeah, for sure gonna have him back on. He's going to Japan. He's going to have a lovely time there. When he gets back, he'll come back on and we'll do one of our special, what do you call them, special episodes? Well, we'll do it, an hour with him, and we'll upload it with the, upload it with the show, but so we can get all the details out of Gavin's amazing brain.
Yeah, because there's too much happening. This is the problem we're facing trying to produce a weekly hour-long show. There's just way too much happening in the tech world to cover thoroughly and with any degree of accuracy. And then you get someone like Gavin who can just give you the deepest of deep dives into a very specific topic. We can't
Yeah.
put a whole show on it, so now we have to do special shows and stuff.
Exactly. And Gavin, with Gavin's expertise in this area and his ability to make things easy to consume so you understand them, I think our industry should really benefit from it because I know in our industry there's a lot of confusion on how these models work. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a great talk. So
Yes.
before we start, just in case anyone heard it, because I know you guys didn't, but I know my mic was on. You might have heard me scream a little bit. My cat, who's been having a problem attacking the other cat, attacked the other cat while he's next to me, and my finger got bit. So that's what that
Oh,
noise was, if anybody heard it. Yeah.
we
So I'm
didn't
good.
hear it, but now we know what you got to go through to put this podcast on.
Exactly. I did a whole timeout with the cat, put hydrogen peroxide on my hand. All good. But in case anyone heard it, because my mic was on, and I just think you two didn't hear it, but I think someone will hear it on the actual, this actually on here. So, and it's
Okay.
overlapped, so we can't cut it. Yeah.
Well,
So.
okay. So the technorati has not come after Christine to censor this
No,
story.
just my
And
persistent cat.
DeepSeek is still out there. And
My
okay,
dumb
so I'm
cat.
not sure where to file this one. Tech politics, sure. Trump has as Trump and Meta came to a $25 million settlement over Meta suspending Trump's account in the aftermath of the January 6th attack to the Capitol. They did such damage to Trump that it's worth $25 million, and now the president of the United States is $25 million richer because he sued Meta and they came to a settlement. And is there anything else to this damn story?
Oh yeah, he was found in court to have been not. It was not illegal. He didn't do any damage. It was found to be perfectly appropriate that they removed his account. So yeah,
Nevertheless,
so he
25
paid
million,
$25 million just to pay it,
and
basically.
he'll stop poking Zuckerberg every time they sit down to have supper. He'll stop kicking him under the table or something.
Exactly.
God.
So
Maybe
yeah, because
he'll let Zuckerberg like cheat a little bit at golf.
There was no legal reason he had to pay that money. There was no lawsuit that was gonna be won because the courts had already decided he was allowed to be taken off. So, but yeah, there you go. Oh, we can move on
Okay.
from this
So
story.
that was a story that just made my lips curl in disgust. Well, this is one that makes them curl in a little bit of a smile.
That's a shot of espresso.
This makes me very happy. Okay, so Elon Musk did a Nazi salute at the inauguration.
Yes.
It wasn't a Roman salute. It wasn't an Elon Musk salute. It wasn't a show of affection. It
Yeah, we are.
was
It was this,
a
yeah.
Sieg Heil.
And in the United States, by the way, Roman salutes are associated with white nationalism as far back as the 30s. So that's not a thing. He did it. We saw it. We don't have to argue about it. It's like he
He
did.
did it on Holocaust Remembrance Day,
Yes, he did.
for
Yeah.
what that's worth, which to me is quite a bit. Anyway, so after the Meta president Elon Musk did a Nazi salute at the newest president Donald Trump's inauguration, It disgusted a lot of people, including like tons and tons and tons of Redditors who have now banned links to Elon Musk's mass communication site Twixter or X. More than 100 subreddits, which serve millions of people, I'm sure the number's actually gone higher and higher now,
And it
are
includes the
ref
app. Go ahead.
or just editing out anything, any reference to X will immediately be banned and removed from again, hundreds and hundreds of subreddits.
Yeah, including Formula One, NBA, Disneyland, and a couple other major ones. Liverpool, football club, Chicago Bears, Florida Gator, like NASCAR. So yeah, so massive. Because those who don't know, Reddit is the eighth most trafficked site on the internet, so in the world.
Well,
So yeah.
Reddit has become actually the internet in many ways. Reddit's become, how to say it, the internet is the foundation stuff is put on top of, and sites like Reddit and Dig before it, and other social recommendation sites are the new gateways or guideways when I don't know what you're looking for. You're just sort of looking around to see what's there. Reddit's an amazing source.
Yeah, and
In
one of the oh, go ahead. Sorry,
look, sorry about that. No, go for it.
the cat bites got my brain all messed up. One of the moderators said last night at Donald Trump's presidential inauguration, Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla and known alt-right personality, showed the world who he truly is and performed a full Sieg Heil Nazi salute, not once but twice. And then he went on that his group has 910,000 members. The man is without a doubt a neo-Nazi. That's one of the ones he's banned from. And then anti-work. I don't think I've heard that one before. They have 2.9 million members, and they also banned him. So I think it's probably gonna be like tens of millions of links that'll no longer be sharing traffic to X, which is pretty massive, since engagement is one
I
of the things that they get measured on.
well yeah indeed again the eighth largest referrer on the internet
Yeah.
is stop referring traffic to you
Yes.
that's been I'm not sure what value being at X is for advertisers right now. You have a fairly limited how to say this a fairly limited audience of the of society, a segment of society as your audience. And it just feels icky, Nazi adjacent. Ugh.
Well, and the thing is now, like the people like to argue, oh, it was this or that. Well, I mean, in Germany right now, there are hundreds of thousands of people protesting his existence because he is working with their far right neo-Nazi party, which is actually in, I believe that's illegal in Germany anyway, but
It is illegal in Germany for good
yeah.
reason. And you know what? There's no argument. The people who are arguing it
Yeah.
are people who've lied about just about everything they've come
Oh,
to. There's
yeah,
no
for
argument.
sure.
It was a fascist salute.
It
He
was,
did
but
it on purpose.
he's now working with those people and in Germany, and he even said that people have to stop feeling guilty about the past. That was his quote there, and then he said it here in the U.S. in an interview. So basically, yeah. So you cannot deny it. If you want to pretend that he's not, tell your brain that he's not far right, neo-Nazi adjacent, or actual neo-Nazi. Like that's up to you, but there's no denying the facts of the case. Like he literally, told the neo-Nazis of Germany not to feel bad about what the Nazis before them did. So let's, yeah. So anyway, that he's it's a flaming decay and decline process.
And so I think we've pretty much established that Elon Musk is a Nazi, and at least at the very least, really Nazi adjacent, if not an
Yeah.
absolute Nazi himself. Okay, so I hope the next story, which we're going to present as three unique stories. This comes from a Roger Monti piece out of Search Engine Journal, and people should read it. And the thing about this piece is, in a fair universe where people are allowed to act in their own best interest and also in the best interests of others, and when you have intelligent players who actually choose to take actions, democracy and people power can often win out. And here's how it goes. Everybody listening in our listening audience, at any rate, virtually everybody knows about the WP WTF WP or I'm sorry WP-WTF period. I think that's how it's going to go down in history as recorded as WPWTF. So Matt Mullenweg, the founder of WordPress, freaks out, becomes very dictatorial, authoritarian, clamps down, sues WP Engine, a whole drama ensues.
Loses
the lawsuit, gets stomped on by the courts, becomes a big man baby about it, and a whole bunch of awful repercussions that have actually hurt many, many businesses and many webmasters and many web businesses happen.
Which if he was only like a small little company, might not be as big of a deal, but he controls 50% of the websites online.
Okay.
45-50%.
So Roger Monty's been watching this really closely, and in Search Engine Journal, he puts three different events, each of which is a major story in and of itself, together to suggest to his audience, and you know, pretty much our audience is you guys, that there may be some serious serious shakeups happening at WordPress. And so here's the stories one by one by one. The first one we're going to call it GoDaddy WordPress. GoDaddy has thrown a $500,000 investment into a
WordPress
parallel
community called the WP Community Collective.
Yeah, it's a parallel WordPress community that is formed a nonprofit. Again, the Christine's of the WP Community Collective, and the goal is to support an independent WordPress open ecosystem. So you got $500K from GoDaddy, who is obviously going to benefit from a free and open WordPress environment. Next story.
Oh, wait. But the interesting thing is
yeah.
BlackRock is one of the investors in GoDaddy, and BlackRock invested in Automattic, which was Matt Mullenweg's commercial. But one thing, BlackRock is down to less than 1% stake in Automattic, but it still is an interesting play. So
when did BlackRock go down to 1% in Automattic? Is that a recent change?
I don't know about the 1%, but they've been very low for some time because we were covering this story over a year and a half now. So
okay.
It was when I did the research the first time we did this story, they're already down. I think it's like 4% or something. It was pretty low.
Okay, so BlackRock is clearing out of the Automattic side of WordPress.
Yeah, and some people understand there's WordPress that's just the nonprofit. There's WordPress that's the for profit, and there's Automattic, which is a related company that's also for profit. So when you hear those, WordPress.org is the one that is the nonprofit. So the BlackRock didn't invest in that. They invest in the other two.
So just to keep things, you know, a little more complicated, story number two, there's another nonprofit on the scene, Post Status WordPress Community, which was a business-focused community that was actually founded 15 years ago. Yoast de Valk, the creator of Yoast Tools, the well-loved Yoast Tools, has invested an indeterminate amount. It doesn't say how much he's thrown into it, but he's invested in and started a new nonprofit that is again part of the alternative community. Post Status WordPress is now a community, is now a nonprofit.
Yeah,
lastly,
and it's
sorry, we
just have to say, because this kind of runs into the next story. It's a parallel WordPress structure that secures and stabilizes the distribution of WordPress themes and plugins. So they're basically like, hey, we're going to have something that's not going to be interfered with, so you won't have a problem with your themes and plugins, which leads into the next story, which is
distributed directory distribution.
Or federated WordPress directories. Yes.
So everything had to go through WordPress.org or Automattic. That's the way it worked. Now it doesn't. Or at least it won't. There's been a huge conversation in the WordPress community about decentralizing plugin and theme distribution, so that a Matt Mullenweg property is not the sole source. Decentralization will solve that by distributing channel through multiple channels. If one shuts down, 10 more still exist. So these three stories together lead Roger to believe that a parallel WordPress community is being created, which was kind of what Matt said could happen all along.
Yeah, and the thing is that he kind of forced people to have to create one, right? Because the way things that he did, you go back and listen to some of our other stories or a long one with Jano, I said, all right, Jano, is that that they he like locked down the core so people couldn't update their plugins. He kicked the long-term developers who have been mostly unpaid, who have contributed for 15, 20 years out of the WordPress group on Slack where they actually develop these things, right? So he basically told them, you don't belong here anymore. I don't care. And I can do whatever I want. And if that means I shut down your website because I decide I'm having a fit that day and I don't want to give access to the core anymore, well, that's what I'm going to do. So he kind of pushed the community to go, we have to find another place. If you won't give up control, because they have proposed things like a board, you know, if you won't give up control, then we got to go somewhere else. And because WordPress is as it is, and Mullenweg even told them, well, then take, you know, make your fork in the core and then go somewhere else. Well, now they have $500,000 from GoDaddy to go do that. And they have an investment from Yoast. Yeah, and Yoast has a very substantial investment, I'm sure, in that. This has been his whole life, so professionally.
Well, again, tyrants tend not to do well in free communities.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is what happened. Matt, dude, you shouldn't have become a tyrant. That's I don't know what to say, but that's how it's working out.
And it wasn't just that he was a tyrant. He just kept doubling down and doubling down and tripling down and then quadrupling down. And then people were like, well, we got to find something else to do. You're not a workable part of our lives or our solutions.
Do you kind of get the sense that this is just maybe just a flight of fancy or something, but say back in September, had Mullenweg, or maybe even October, had Mullenweg just come out and wrote a blog post and said, look, guys, I just had a breakdown. That was crazy.
It would have been fine.
Everyone would have forgiven him, right?
Yeah, because he's done this once before and they forgave him the first time. So, but he just kept going on. And the thing when he started banning people that had contributed, like the people that contributed core elements to WordPress that made it what it is, made him rich, right? Because he also uses this on the paid version. It's just he just got into, you know, what a lot of them seem to do these days when they're that wealthy is they just think they built it all themselves and everyone else can go sod off. And the truth is he didn't build it himself. He built it on the backs of all these people who volunteered their time to this nonprofit, you know, community because they thought they were building something together that was better for the world. And when he made it apparent that there's no way he's going to budge from his position, well, they started seeking alternatives. So that's what we're looking at today.
Well, again, six Emperor tyrants. This is what happens. You mess with the people. The people find ways around to survive.
Exactly.
Okay, this is, you know what? This is actually in a weird way a connected story. Tyrants don't do this stuff. So Meta has gone far right. At least Zuckerberg has moved to conform Meta's policies to those of the Trump administration. And a lot of that is performative stuff that doesn't really save money, but sends message. And one of those messages was the removal of sanitary supplies, feminine products, out of men's rooms, which had been put there for trans persons, women who transitioned to men. So trans men who use the, you know, the male washroom. Tampons were removed from men's bathrooms, and that's the way it is. The employees are rebelling, and Zuckerberg
employees are
is
bringing
revolting.
Their own. They're bringing their own, and they're leaving them, and that's very, very sweet. The other thing is that, you know, I remember, like, the reason we have these policies at tech companies is when tech companies started, a lot of their efforts were to make the world a better place, right? Google used to have the green. You know, you could spend all your time on creating new things or the green policies, and you know, and they gave the remember when Meta put up the I think it was like 120 different genders you could select from on their I forget what it was your profile, and now we're just moved into this where like literally Zuckerberg said that they need more masculine energy in tech. In tech, where if I go to a conference. I like the masculine energy sign to me, but not the kind he's talking about. And I go to check. I go to the bathroom in like 2 minutes while the men wait in line with 100 people, right? Which is never the case, right? So the idea that they would do this, like, it's just so ridiculous. And by the way, I was gonna say it, I'm sorry, but if you're harshing on trans people, find something else to do with your life. They're less than 1% of the population. They don't bother you. They're just trying to be themselves. And there's no harm to you if they put feminine products in a bathroom,
Indeed,
right?
it's just a
Yeah,
performative hate. There's no
exactly.
reason to take them away.
No.
It doesn't save Meta any substantial amounts of money. It's
No.
just performative hate.
Yeah, I like that performative hate. I mean, I don't like performative hate, but I think that's a good word for it.
Again, Meta employees are staging a little rebellion by bringing in their own sanitary supplies and leaving them for persons who need them in men's washrooms, and Zuckerberg's just revolting.
And the worst part about that is because this isn't new policy for Facebook, right? They've always been this way. So it's not like all that silliness with woke. It has nothing to do with that. They've always been that way. So if you're a trans person, now all of a sudden you're being singled out for being a trans person, even though your workplace that you probably partially selected on their policies has now decided that you are lesser. So it's like a bigger impact than just like they don't have products, right?
Welcome to the occupation. So Threads added 20 million monthly users this December, reaching up to 320 million. This is Instagram Threads, Meta's microblogging service. Does that have anything to do with people leaving Facebook?
Also, I don't know because it does surprise me because I don't hear a lot of people telling me they're using Threads. When they're like, I'm leaving, they're going to Blue Sky, right? So,
Yeah.
yeah, and I like Threads, but it's not as easy to use on the phone, and that's usually where I use it as Twitter. And so it gets a little, and it tires me out. Like Twitter doesn't because I get excited by what I'm reading, and I don't mind a little bit of effort. But it is a good platform. I just didn't realize that it gained that much. So it's doing really well. It had 320 million users since when did they start? Like 3 years ago?
Yeah, approximately, yeah.
And they're adding a million to signups today right now.
It's for me, I don't think I'll be able to participate there. I don't want to give Meta any of my stuff, not directly at any rate. But yeah, there you go. Threads is surprisingly adding 20 million users a month.
Wow.
At least in December 2024.
I do know all the major news people are there, so that could be partially why people are going for their news.
Comparably, Blue Sky. This story reports Blue Sky having 26.44 million users, but I did see a notice of Blue Sky yesterday that they hit the 30 million user mark.
That's
Or
probably
Blue
more
Sky
accurate.
says they hit
Yeah.
30 million.
That sounds right.
Okay. For what it's worth, though, Zuckerberg is stating that Threads is adding 1 million daily signups. That certainly makes it a place where eyeballs are landing. Now here's a neat okay, so eyeballs is actually that's kind of a neat segue. I didn't even mean to say it. Eyeballs are landing. So the way we consume media is changing so much and so rapidly. It used to be like you'd had newspapers and television and radio, and then the internet came along, and you still had newspapers and television and radio, and they were all thought of as distinct environments. You had your newspaper and your numbers, your TV numbers and your radio numbers. Internet comes along and provides a platform there where all three mediums can exist in the same space, basically seamlessly becoming the same medium. You're just listening to an audio podcast or watching a video, a vlog, or reading a newspaper, which is presented generally in a blog format.
It's
People,
called
oh, sorry.
it's MMM.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, I
Media
love this one. Yeah,
model.
we need acronyms. We have acronyms for everything, and this is the best one ever. MMM.
It's lunchtime.
The marketing mix model. And
Yeah.
so think about it, you have all these different mediums together in one media. How do you measure this? And what's the effectiveness? Are Christina my voices more effective than, say, a video? Are people paying more attention to the printed content than they are the spoken content? It's really hard to tell. Google's introduced AI into the mixed marketing model, and they're calling it another M word, Meridian. Meridian helps advertisers understand the real impact of their marketing efforts. It goes beyond usual conversation metrics and usual conversion metrics, and shows how brand building activities like TV commercials and YouTube ads can affect long-term business results and future customer acquisition. I'm quoting from Meridian, of
course. I was
going
to read that.
Oh, sorry. What do you think? What do you think, though?
I think it's necessary. I don't know. Until we use it, we don't know how good it is, you know, because if it's not really good at distinguishing and really pulling in that data, then it's kind of useless. But I'm sure with the fact that the person that did it is a doctorate founder and director at Analytic Edge. So, you know, I have a feeling it'll probably be pretty good, you know.
So Google has thrown all this energy into a tool that does this. Why? I mean, that's the first thing that ran through my head is why.
I think just because it'll make it easier for people to get their ads right. Because if you don't have the data, you don't get your ad targeting correct. And if you don't get your ad targeting correct, you stop buying ads. If you're not making the money off of it. And so I think that's probably a lot to do with it. Because one of its biggest thing is YouTube reach and search performance. We know that's one of the second largest search engine in the universe. And, they're now giving you more data to work with on there. So. I think that's why, because it's a big ad platform for them. Huge ad platform. And
Google has ins in virtually every communications medium possible that's out there. They supply display advertising or audio advertising, or in the realm of YouTube, a platform for video advertising. So yeah, this just sort of ties metrics from all corners of the media universe in one space.
Yeah, pretty much. I think this is a better measurement tool.
So, Meridian is out there for the marketing mix model. I think we're going to be. I'm. By the way, download it and start using it. It's open for people to use. This is a Matt Southern piece from Search Engine Journal, and this was a really interesting one. It's a long piece. It's definitely worth the read. We're just going to just gloss over it. And it's people are studying AI overviews and the impact they have on search engine results more and more often. As Gavin said earlier, before we go into the story, I really want to caution people. What we're reporting right now is going to change. This is good to... I mean, honestly, our shows get yeah. Right. This is good to wear as we speak, and it may change tomorrow, for goodness sake.
Well, every time we do one of these overview stories, it's changed because they're always experimenting with it. So, just the subtitle is Google AI overviews appear in 30% of searches and nearly 3/4 of problem solving queries, according to a new study. So that's the long part of the article is telling you how they got to all the findings there.
So, authoritatus. Yeah, you do that word. In collaboration with SEO David Cousin, has published a study. Authoritas, there you go. Has published a study that examines how generative AI overviews impact organic search performance. So in December, they studied 10,000 keywords across 7 industries in the U.S. For about 29.9% of the 10,000 keywords, AI overviews appeared, but it only made up 11.5% of total search volume. So a total search volume, we're thinking of featured snippets, then links, and line of videos, and any other recommendations Google may throw in your face. High volume keywords are less likely to have an AI overview than mid-range search terms, with monthly search volumes between, say, 500 and 2,500. About 42% of keywords in this mid-range will feature an AI overview. Telecommunications had a high percentage of keywords linked to AI overviews, while beauty and cosmetics did not. Queries aimed at solving problems or asking questions tended to trigger AI overviews. Solving problems, 74%. Asking questions, 69%.
Well, also, and when it comes to any sort of large language model, it's easier for them to answer questions because the structure of a question is so definite compared to how we speak in every other way. So it makes it much easier for, I shouldn't say understand, I hate when we use human words. It makes it better at giving the right predictive answer.
There you go.
better understands what the answer should be, because most of the words, like what should I do today, only a couple words in there that have meaning to the predictive text answer. So
I swear to goodness, within a year, we're going to be able to do a sentence like that on the fly without having to correct the way we phrase the sentence to make sure we're doing it right. We'll get it eventually.
I try to be careful because I see people in our industry think these things don't do what they don't do, because so often human words are used.
I hear myself trying to explain this to clients, and I catch myself mid-sentence it's almost like not yourself censoring, but yourself correcting as you're phrasing the sentence. Okay, so how does this affect you as an SEO? AI overviews are here. The only thing that's going to change about them is how they're presented. They ain't going away. So right now, as they're presented on the desktop, if user clicks show more, the page moves down by about 220 pixels, which pushes the 10 blue links down. Less visible, less clicked, lower success metrics, at least the way we measure them today. Similarly, with mobile devices, you mightn't even see a organic result. And if you do, it might only be one or two of them without scrolling. So, yeah.
So basically,
is you're just not going to get seen as much.
Well, the thing is that if you want to be an AI overview, people have like so many different theories. Do your SEO well. Because depending on the study, anywhere from 50% to 90% of AI overviews come from sites in the top 20. So if your SEO is doing well, you have a much better opportunity of being in there than not. Because they're using, because these things hallucinate and tell you things to like glue your cheese to your pizza and drink your own pee. And if you don't know those stories, you can look back in our history. it makes it hallucinate less. And it also makes sure that it's at least a good site giving the content to the large language model instead of just random, like they were picking from Reddit and stuff. We know when they first launched, and that was a disaster. So now it's like, oh, top 20 sites. Well, we ranked them well. We scored them. They have high scores, good quality. They're probably good content. And that's why my assumption is that most of them come from the top 10, top 20.
But again, having a high ranking does not guarantee you'll be the one selected, nor does using Schema. Although Schema helps seed a featured snippet, which may give you a better chance of getting AI overviewed.
Because it's not information retrieval that the large language model is doing. It does training, so it knows what to predict as a topic, and then it gives it the whichever model they're using, refinement or RAG. They put those documents there so it knows, like, I'm only supposed to write from this stuff, right? Like, if I'm talking about coffee, I'm not going to have Big Bird in a sentence because Big Bird probably has nothing to do with coffee, right? And if I just take 20 sites from the top or 100 sites or whatever that have been ranked well, then I know I'm probably getting quality and I'm only going to write from those. I'm going to predict text from those documents. So not perfect, though. You still have to double check a lot of times, but that is why.
So this is something we're all going to adjust to. Doing the right things will tend to put your site in a position where it will tend to, where it may be used as training material or may be referenced in the, I'm sorry, not used as training material, but maybe referenced in the reg, the reg confirmations. Would that be the right word? Confirmations?
No, RAG is basically the process of just bringing in documents to help refine the query. That's
the refinement. That's the right word, refinement. Yeah. The RAG refinement, trying to figure out what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
You might, doing all the right things might place you better in that, but it might not. It's so much different than it used to be with the SERPs, right?
Right, like featured snippets. You didn't get in there if you were like on the 100th result, right? But you could maybe, but... still, it was a lot of the top 20 and a lot of the top 10. The same thing for AI overviews. They're using it as a quality gate. If I'm going to pull documents and I can get all of them from the top 20, that's probably why sometimes the studies say 90%. Or maybe I can't get all of them, or I'm going to get the majority from the top 20 and make sure they like check themselves against each other. Then I can make sure that I don't write, drink your own urine for kidney stones or glue pizza, cheese on your pizza. Let me keep it from sliding off. And that's why it's there.
Okay, we are close on time, but long on stories. So if you're in Germany and you get a manual action for site reputation abuse, well, so did a whole bunch of other Germans. Google's released that in Germany, just like they released it in Italy, Spain, and France last week. It's Germany's turn. They're slowly moving east, it seems.
Yeah, and if you want to know more about some of these stories this week, because some of them are extensions of last week, so we can cover them short here and just refer people back to last week for the long version. So that's, we covered that last week. Yeah.
Okay, URL is unknown to Google in Search Console means that URL has got zero priority, and well, Google probably doesn't care.
Yeah, it just says it's reasonable. I'm sorry, they asked Google. Google replied, with those have no priority. They're not known to Google search, so inherently they have no priority whatsoever. URLs move between states as we collect signals for them. And in a particular case that Adam was asking about, signals told a story that made our systems go, forget that URL exists. That's scary. I guess you could say it actually fell out of the barrel altogether. So Adam asked, is it reasonable to assume that pages with URL is unknown to Google index state in GSC have the lowest crawl priority in your system? And you notice that previous indexed pages suddenly became unknown to Google. So basically, if you have unknown to Google, there's something wrong. It's, they're not crawling it anymore. They don't care. Your page is invisible, and it changes state. So you can have pages go from ranking to completely unknown. So what's scary saying?
What would you tell someone? I fix the page and throw links at it is what I'd tell someone.
No, I would say first check your technical, and then throw
No,
links at
fix
it.
it. Fix the page. Fix the
Yeah, well,
page.
I mean,
Something's wrong.
yeah, fix it, but check the technical, like technical content links go that way.
No, that was exempted. That there's a technical problem, but you have no priority in Google. You got no standing. They don't care you
Yeah,
exist. So we're
yeah.
assuming that you're fixing the page. Fix the page, do the technical work, and then throw links at it. You need to get noticed. Don't buy crap ass links, but you gotta get them crawling that page
And
again.
internal links too. You might have cut off the internal links to that page. Google's like, I can't see you anymore. So bye-bye.
But again, if but again, the bottom line, if you're unknown to Google,
Yeah.
you're unknown to Google. It's very unfriendly that way.
And by the way, Sitebulb and Screaming Frog can use the Google API for Search Console. They can give you a more comprehensive picture because they report on both of those as well.
Okay. Very true. Merging content is often more challenging than moving an entire website from domain to domain. Absolutely.
Yeah, I always tell people what we need to do is launch it all at one time and do the work in a secondary, like copy the site down and do it secondary. And Google's recommending here that you want to move everything at once if you can. Because if you move it chunk by chunk by chunk, Google has to continue to reevaluate and reevaluate and reevaluate. If you do it all at one time, I did this for a client. It took us like 2 years because they kept getting bought out. And we kept having to redo it. But within 7 days, the entire site moved. So you just.
And you saw a major benefit rather than a teeny little incremental benefit that you
Yeah,
may or may not have even noticed, right?
exactly. So you just want to make sure that you get with the spreadsheet and a mapper, and you map all your URLs to one that's exactly the same or similar, or create new content if you have to. If the order goes exact page, similar page, folder structure, bigger folder structure, never the home page unless that's your only re result or your only option, because Google will devalue those if they're not relevant to the home page. And then do it at one time and make sure that you monitor it heavily. Oh, yeah,
Okay.
but John's right. Yeah, so.
So this is an interesting one. Google has added 11 new pages to the quality raters guidelines.
Yeah.
Now again, the warning on the guidelines, they're just guidelines. They're not the secret sauce.
No, they're basically like, don't do this because this is for spam and stuff, right? So it's like cloaking, doorway abuse, expired domain abuse, hacked content, hidden text and link abuse, keyword stuffing, link spam, machine-generated traffic. They have a section on that now. I think they had one before, but now it's like a little bit bigger. That would be AI, guys. Malware and malicious practices, misleading functionality, scale content abuse, scraping, and site reputation abuse. Oh, and sneaky redirects, then affiliation. Wow, they added some. User-generated spam, and then things that can lead to direct demotion and removal. I would make sure you read this page and make sure if you're doing any of this stuff to fix it, because on an update sometime this year, you could wake up and find your site and the traffic gone, and then you're out of the, you're out for 6 to 9 months while you fix things and get re-ranked.
And if you're in Germany and you woke up to a manual action, You definitely want to be reading this page.
Exactly, the spam. Definitely read the spam.
Okay. Speaking of spam, this is a debate in the SEO industry. I know where I stand in the debate. I truly believe Google when they say we ignore crap ass links. I do believe them, except in certain cases.
Yes.
So Mueller is telling people, don't worry about disavowing links. The only people who are going to tell you to disavow links are spammers and scammers.
Yeah. Okay. I have a little problem with it because this is one borderline on conspiracy theory. Like they go out there and they just want you to waste your time. Also, he's kind of referring to tool companies because they've come out about that recently. And that's not really fair. There are reasons you need to check your links. Like, you just need to know if you have good ones, right? Like, because you don't have to have spam links to not rank. You could just have a whole bunch of like really crap links with no good ones. But anyway, but my issue with this is just the trick is, I found out from a client a few years back that if the content matches the page and they send links to it, and the links match the content on the page, well, Google doesn't get rid of those links. And if you've been, attacked, and you see, and one way to tell is you've got all these spammy links coming to you, is that if they say stuff on that page, because in my case, the site search created pages that were all indexable, and hackers had been using that for 20 years, hackers and spammers. So, they were selling, let's just say Mozilla downloads, because we don't want to get removed from Apple. I mean, is it Apple? Yeah. So there's like, that was a big thing for a long time, right? Sell downloads. So because that URL said that, and the H1 said that, and the title description said that, and the content of the page said that, because that's how the pages are created from search. When they sent a million links saying that, well, Google didn't do anything about it. They ranked number three for those terms. So.
Google said, I mean, shortly after Penguin was released, when it comes to links, don't worry about it. If they're bad links, we don't care. We ignore them. We count the good links and we discount the bad links. But not every time, indeed. If you suddenly get a bulk of very, very bad links, or if they see a pattern of you purchasing links, trying to manipulate them, they'll warhammer you. They will hit you on the head with a hammer.
Yeah, so if they know you're purchasing links, you can get a spam manual action for links. It don't happen all that frequently right now, but anytime Google wants to clean up the link profiles, the sites, they will hit people hard for those. And then there's the we bought links, but they're just cruddy links, and Google just devalues them. Well, you don't know that they've been devalued because they don't tell you, but you might see a site drop because you were getting a boost from those links, even though they weren't links that Google likes. Doesn't mean you weren't getting a boost. So when they take them away, you can get a devaluation and drop, and then you have to. You have to have like a link tool to examine why you dropped, right? And then if you have somebody who's accessing your site or using your site search because it's wide open and they can put anything they want on that and it shows up on the page and they send links to it, well, those are actually going to work and you're going to rank for those things on those pages. So that's really where it is. Does it match the content? If it doesn't, they probably just devalue them, but then you could lose traffic and not understand why because they were supporting you. Or are you buying links where you could put yourself in a manual action condition, and that you'd be down for 6 to 9 months easy on that one. So if you're buying links, make sure you're buying it from people that are really good at it. So
now here's the funny thing. After she said all of that, and she's absolutely right, I bet you Christine's gonna agree that the vast majority of people out there selling disavow services are spammers and scammers. Because they really are.
Yeah, like there's real tools, like link research is a real tool. Research tools is a real tool, and they tell you other things about the links though that help you understand your profile. Like I have a client who's like, "Why aren't we ranking? We have all these links." And then I go look at it. It's like, "Oh, because all your links are from sites that you own, and you don't have any other links. They own like 10 sites, right?" And they weren't trying to spam. They just thought that was okay. And it's like, well, you don't have any other links. So until we get links from other people, there's no way. So those tools can help you understand your link profile.
But so when SEOs say it depends on just about anything, there's probably 100 different reasons for that.
And let's put it this way. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, this being just another example of how, we've clearly said this is how it is on links, but most of those people are still scammers and spammers.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to be careful when it comes to anything SEO service-wise. Let me put it this way. Google had us do disavows back then. Because they wanted the link networks they couldn't find. Then they found all those. So if you're not paying like top dollar for the, you know, Black Hat links, you're not getting good links. Because to have a really good Black Hat link service that survived Penguin or still survives today because of all they learned from Penguin, you're not paying like a dollar a link. You know, I always tell people Black Hat is fine. It's a tool. I don't care. But if you're not paying the same that you'd be paying for a regular SEO, because there are real reasons to sometimes do Black Hat, then you're not getting good services and move on. Because if someone's doing it for $100, you're going to get ripped off. So.
Okay. Google's made a couple of updates around advertising verification recently, and actually, they seem to have relaxed some of the rules around verification. Advertisers will no longer require to apply for certification in order to run ads for vignettes or e-vignettes across Europe. And if you're running ads promoting business identifiers and exclusively targeting France as a region, you don't need to qualify as a government or authorized provider, but you'll still need to apply to be excluded from policy to ensure your ads aren't improperly disapproved. There you
And
go.
This will start on February 5th and fully ramp up the 8 weeks after.
Okay.
We got the fast stories next.
Yeah.
I'm going to run through them, and I'm just going to ask you if you want to comment so we can get through this, because we're over time. I have a few of these. So, Bing tests AI answers sources section and carousel view and videos is the title from Search Engine Roundtable.
That's Roundtable, yeah.
Basically, it's just a new way of showing their AI overviews. They're putting them in a carousel format for the sources. Sort of like Google does this, right? Picturing the wrong thing. Where below your AI overview is going to be a carousel of sources you can scroll through. Before,
Hey.
I think they're opening up a list and it'd be like 90 of them.
Fabrice, if you or anyone in your team's listening, let us know how to get in on that. Like, give us clues.
Yes. And we have to have Fabrice back on in a few months.
Yeah.
Google tests jobs at similar employers. This is kind of cool. So Google is, when they pull the jobs posting schema, now they're going to actually look at other companies that have a similar job. So you're looking at, you know, I want to find a job, and you have to, you know, search and search and go through. They're going to say, hey, here's other companies that are doing that. Seems like a benefit. Did I miss anything?
No. I mean, I hope it's a benefit for job seekers. Yeah, I hope it works well. I hope people make good use of a feature like this.
Yeah, I think so. It'll at least give you an idea of what companies there are. Because for me at this point in my career, I don't, you know, I love working for myself. But if the right company came along, like let's say World Central Kitchen needed an SEO and I could go help the world, like I'm taking that job, right? So while I'm looking for something and it tells me World Central Kitchen has something, well, I might go apply for it. So I think that's a good function. Google Business Profiles now allow bulk managing special hours. There's a lot of issue with, I know from our friends who run like franchise-like companies, you know, where they have all sorts of franchise, all sorts of companies all over the country, that bulk editing things were really difficult. So this is special hours for one location. You can copy hours from one to the other. Selected locations will have the exact same hours, especially when you have special hours. You can manage, it's only if you're managing 100 locations or fewer. If you're a larger brand, the feature is not enabled at this time. And if you have multiple accounts, you'll only see this feature in the ones that manage 100 locations or fewer. Clear old hours first. Oh, okay. So if you have hours and clear, and you're changing them clear, because it copies everything to the new one, right? So you don't want to make sure that you don't have an issue there. And it's a full override. So everything that you select will be completely replaced. So you want to make sure that you did it right before you hit go.
But this makes things infinitely easier for people who are managing multiple profiles or account with multiple locations.
Exactly.
That's very cool.
It is very cool. Moving next, Google Search Console reports latest update in 30-minute intervals. I can't speak today. This is an interesting one. It's not anything significant. It's just that Google now is giving us like shorter windows for when it updates Search Console. But in this case, it's now very found on the half hour. Not 3 hours or 4 hours, it's 3.5 hours. So,
well, yeah. You know, it just sort of says that we were updated 3.5 hours ago rather than every hour, it says. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is and their new 24-hour traffic gauge. I've been really wanting these to be more useful to me than they actually are.
True. They sounded really cool. John
We'll
said
see
that
how they
they're.
go over time. It might help with PPC bidding.
Yeah, that's true. And John did say that the feedback discovered on social media about the time that encouraged the team to provide a more granular number in there. I guess there are some groups of people that, they do have to know that quick, like new sites, e-commerce sites, especially during holidays and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. I don't do the nice segues, like you have to learn how to do that. Google Business Profile gains batch editing and pricing and moving menu items. So basically now, they got that fun little, I don't know which language they're using, but like when JavaScript's added and you can just drag and drop things, or they also have a little menu list to move things up and down. So now when you edit, you'll see like the six little dots on the left side. That's always an indicator you can move that item in an interface. So now you can move up, down, edit multiple items at the same time, and you don't have to do them one at a time. That's going to make people's lives a lot easier because it's
Well, you
always
know
such
what?
a thing.
And there's your segue into the next story. This also makes people's lives easier.
Which one?
A Google search test frequency saved label as a saved label on local results. Oh,
They're
sorry,
having a
test frequently saved a frequently saved label.
Yeah. So basically, if you're looking for a restaurant in your city, like mine has 3,500, and you're like, well, these all sound kind of good, you'll see one has more saves than the other, or that they all have frequently saved items, and then the next one doesn't. So I don't know if that gives you really an idea that it's better, because some people groups are more tech savvy than other groups, and they may be doing the, younger people may be like save, 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 save,
Yeah, but
but it does.
still, with the massive population that's researching restaurants, say in Vegas, just the huge demographic spectrum of people that go to Vegas, I'd say something like that would be fairly representative, eh?
Definitely on the strip. Definitely on the strip, it would be because people plan their vacations for sure. If you're in a touristy area, it would probably be very helpful because all these people saved it, as long as it has a rating that says that. If it's like they all saved it and it's like a 2.2, well, they probably saved it and are never going back. So, yeah.
Here's the hint to Google search. Make this functionality explain to the like make sure the users understand what they're seeing or they won't understand it.
Yeah, that's very true. So, and do you believe it? We got through the grid and we're only a little late. We have one more story, which is a water is wet story. Water
Oh
wet. Well,
yeah.
I think we
How
have to
much
end on this one.
content do you read in a day?
Oh gosh, so much. So much content. I really do. So, if I'm not working on something, I'm reading something. So, but.
So John Mueller understands that we can see it. Yeah, we know, we don't know. I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Well, I told you, I think I asked you, I don't know if I asked you on air, that when I read AI content now in my head, because I hear it in my head, there's a pattern to it that I notice right away. Like, and not everybody does that. There are people that don't even have an inner monologue. That was the craziest
Which
thing I
is
learned
weird.
during the pandemic, right? Because I asked friends and they don't. Or there are people that can't see things. It's called aphasia, right? But for me, my brain is very active that way. So I'm like, I hear I read my head. It's hard to explain, but I'm sure you know what I mean. If you read a lot of books, you probably do this. Like I read a ton of books as a kid. You start to hear patterns
Oh,
as you're
sure.
reading, yeah, in
Well,
your brain.
I think that's actually the mark of a good SEO is you're able to spot patterns, and inside those
Yeah.
patterns, you're able to see the anomaly really quickly.
Exactly. So, John Mueller said that he finds it interesting how those who spend time in our industry can often recognize made for search engine content fairly quickly. Yeah, water's wet. Like we work with it all day long, right? You and I are constantly improving sites or fixing sites or helping them get out of, devaluations. And so it's pretty easy to tell when somebody made a site just for SEO purposes and the content just for SEO purposes. Like I read one site and it was like supposed to be these details about how to protect your site and from, security issues. And it was like five paragraphs for a page. It's like, and I kept reading and it was like 100 of those. And I'm like, okay. So this is made for ads. And of course, then I looked and I was like, yeah, it was made for ads. That's called an MFA site.
So
So.
when I see things like the Verge is like so trolling the SEO world with their essential
Oh.
guides to goblin content.
It's not even a guide. It's like their new magazine, their new publication. So,
Well, yeah, but the
yeah.
thing is, this is what they're talking about.
Yes.
There was a whole generation of searchy people who practiced this content SEO thing that
It
was just
worked,
so
though.
formulaic. It worked. It absolutely worked. It worked like
Yeah.
wildfire. Earned a
They're the
lot of
ones buying the
money.
drinks in the bars.
But that's the stuff that Verge is calling goblin content. And that's where Verge is mistakening what SEO is with greedy, and the people who were making those content, they were just following the rules as laid out for them.
Yeah, that's a thing though that always little bothers me a little bit is when people write. By the way, I never see a major publication understand what SEO does. It's almost always writing about affiliate marketing, and I gotta go. You have SEOs. You could just talk to them. They could tell you, right? Last year, we know, or was it last year? Year before, The Verge wrote about some SEO party with an alligator on the roof. Like what? There was no party like that. The person mentioned in the story didn't know about the party like that, right? But they often in our industry, they often confuse affiliate marketing, which uses SEO as a tool and does formulate content like this, like John's talking about, with SEOs like me and Jim, who we're sitting there racking our brains on data to make sure that our clients get the best performance they can out of a search engine. We're not doing things that are tricks, or we're not doing things that are hacks, because that's not sustainable. So I know, Jim, you think this way too. I always see SEOs as the person that's standing between the company and the person's job, right? If we don't do SEO well and we use tricks and things like that and then it crashes, people lose their jobs. Like that's who we work for. I wish I had the time to do affiliate marketing because, there was a time someone's like, we could give you part of play on gaming sites out of the country. And I'm like, oh my God, part of play is like, it could be $1 million a month, right? But that's all you do. And you do these kind of sites where you do, made for AdSense, made for ads, you do formulate content, use AI to spin everything up. But that's not long-term SEO. SEO is a profession, like Jim and I do, and like we talk about all the time here, is learning all the million, basically, if you're building a house, the million codes that make that house a good house. And that's what we do, And so the Verge doing the whole baiting us today thing was just kind of silly given what they write about SEO.
Well,
So,
now, for what it's worth, I have been to those affiliate marketing
oh,
parties,
they're
and the
fun.
alligators are doing a lot of cocaine, and that's where those stories come from, coked up alligators.
They're
Don't
definitely fun.
ever, 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 as a journalist, quote a coked up alligator. He's lying. He's just making it up. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like, he's coked up, for God's sake.
Well, I can
Anyway.
say the SEO industry had a lot of fun with that because at the next conference, there was a lot of gator stuff, including costumes.
Yes,
So,
indeed.
yes.
Go Seminoles. Okay, that's it. Full clock and then some. While we're in the room, I really want to reach out and thank Audience Key and Wix Studio, our sponsors. I also want to promote the SEO charity stream that's coming up on March 27th. SEO charity in this case is going. I think it's a Pause for the Cause.
Yeah, it's
Anton
good.
Shooks,
Anton, so yeah.
charity for animals left behind in war-torn Ukraine. Sponsor this, and actually, there's some amazing people, yourself included, Christine, who are going to be part of SEO Charity. The stream is March 27th. Look it up, tune in, and we got to check out. We're
Oh,
we've
one
gone
last
around the
thing. Just
clock.
we
What's
have
up?
just one last note about Audience Key. One of the key things that people probably don't understand about it, because what we describe it as, if you have a Shopify site and you can't do like products and categories, or it's really slow, they have the ability to work from the edge on the server, give you products, categories, make it super fast with static HTML. So it's a really good product. Because on top of that, it also helps you with all your matching your keywords, knowing when you do cannibalize your keywords, when you have keywords fall off, it gives you an alert, all that kind of stuff. So it's a great product. But it also helps with that Shopify problem, which is huge. So I just did a Shopify audit, so I had to say that. So go
Oh
ahead.
my God. Okay, we got to have them back on again
Yes, we
to
do.
talk through that, because that actually is a very big problem for SEOs, making changes on the go, and the time it takes to move a change through an org chart. huge problem, especially when it's just a little content thing.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway,
Okay.
so yeah, well, okay, thank you, everybody.
Again, on behalf of Christine Chackinger, this is Jim Hedger. Christine Chackinger from Saints on Walls is Jim Hedger from DigitalWise Media. You have been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast for WMR on the 30th of January, 2025. Friends, we live in change, rapidly changing times. Be kind to each other. Keep your feet on the ground. Remember the code from which you came. And yeah, be kind, rank well. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.